race is a choice. This is Battleground America. Here's Tara Servatius.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Insane Things Podcast. This week's podcast will build on itself, because to understand Trump's China trip, you gotta kind of understand what happened in Iran this week. But I'm getting ahead of myself. We'll start with insane thing number five. After fighting the most badass war ever, I mean, whoever thought any American president would have the guts to kill layer after layer of murderous Iranian leaders. But Trump did, slicing his way through leadership layer one, leadership layer two, and deep into leadership layer three. He was killing it. But that's not the insane part. No, the insane part is that he stopped. Just stopped 5 weeks ago. Then it got even more insane, because with 2,000 tankers trapped and the world's whole oil market held hostage, because oil's a world market, so even if we're producing our own, the prices are determined by everyone else having enough, 2,000 tankers stalled in the Gulf as he decided to let Iran do whatever the hell they wanted. Again, these are the people that tried to kill him, tried to kill Trump three times. We just did the most recent prosecution of the third team leader, and suddenly decided that, yeah, I could like totally negotiate with these people. It seemed insane. Quite frankly, it still does. Even Trump himself this week admitted, we're not done. We just stopped cold.
Is it accurate to say you think the combat operations are over and done? But there
no,
may
I didn't
be-
say that. I said they are defeated, but that doesn't mean they're done. We could go in for two more weeks and do every single target. We've done probably 70% of them, but we have other targets that we could conceivably hit.
You can tell watching Fox News that the national security experts are driven damn near insane by this. They have to couch it in polite terms because the viewers are such big fans of Trump, but they're about to come up out of their seats. Why do this? And then it got even more insane as Pakistan, who's been the supposedly neutral arbiter here, asked Trump, hey, could you pull back on that Project Freedom escort and just leave those tankers, all 2,000 of them sitting there, leave world oil prices artificially jacked up? And Trump said, sure, anything for you. Well, without that escort, Iran has gone wild in the strait. Well, as wild as it can with about, I don't know, what, six gunboats? But it's enough to stop those tankers because the insurance won't insure them. And then Trump just let them run wild. Now, stick with me as I lay this out, folks, because there may actually be a strategy here. I think there's a strategy here, because the Trump administration was humiliated this week when it turned out that the whole time Pakistan, a supposedly neutral party, has been hosting these talks, they've been sheltering part of the Iranian Air Force, their planes hidden from us so they can be used later to kill our troops in Pakistan. A total betrayal that had senators in a hearing this week up in arms.
Secretary Hegseth, if the mediator is allowing reconnaissance aircraft of Iran to be parked in Pakistani air bases, do you think that's consistent with being a fair mediator?
I wouldn't want to get in the middle of these negotiations. Yeah. I want
well,
maximum
I do.
Efficacy
I want to
people.
Get in the middle of these negotiations. I don't trust Pakistan as far as I can throw them. If they actually do have Iranian aircraft parked in Pakistan bases to protect Iranian military assets, that tells me we should be looking maybe for somebody else to mediate. No wonder this damn thing is going nowhere. So, you know, I appreciate all you've done. I'm very supportive of it. But when it comes to Pakistan and China, enough already.
It got so bad by the beginning of the week that Iran was bombing our bases again, bombing our base in Erbil, Iraq. Folks, because the Iranian bombings never stopped, and a lot of people don't know this, we can't fully staff our bases. So that base only had a skeleton crew to keep it from being overrun. But it still had troops on it. Iran bombed it. And We pretended not to notice. Meanwhile, we clocked a 3.8% inflation rate and a 0.6%. That's not good. Producer price index, 40% of which was due to extremely high prices of oil. Again, we could begin to bring them down tomorrow if we just escort the tankers through instead of letting Iran run wild. But Trump didn't do it. Is he trying to show the world what the strait would be like without America? Or was he trying to defer to China? Because it's really Chiran. If you've listened to my previous podcast, Iran doesn't do anything without China's permission. China literally controls its grid, which is run by the same companies that do the monitoring and surveillance system in China. China literally controls Iran. They can turn the lights on and off anytime they want. They can turn the internet on and off anytime they want. So we talk about battling Iran. You're battling China. So in the beginning of this conflict, that $4 a gallon gas, totally worth it because it was just the cost of doing business. Now it's the cost of waiting around and letting Iran do whatever it wants. For 10 days, by the way, Iran, after standing us up at the talks in Pakistan, didn't even bother to respond to our offer as the tankers idled and gas prices, well, quite frankly, looked like hell. This is either a genius strategy so insane we've never seen anything like it before, or Trump's lost his mind. The person who understands least is General Jack Keane. Man, if you don't want to go fight the war yourself, he's saying, let Israel do it. This was in the beginning of the week. When he pointed out again, look, we only had 2 weeks of bombing left when we quit, and that was 5 weeks ago. We could be done. So why are we dithering?
We should go back and execute Project Freedom, take the Strait of Hormuz away from the Iranians, secure it and open it for navigation. And then we have to unleash the Israelis. They have a very comprehensive bombing campaign that they're going to conduct that deals with leadership. It deals with energy. It deals with all the weapon systems. Remember, from the outset, we don't talk about it very much, but it is a fact. The Israelis have always had more air power in this fight than we've had. And they still have more in it right now. So what they can do comprehensively here in terms of air power is significant. Remember, when we went to the ceasefire, we only had 2 weeks left. That was a month ago.
Even Netanyahu, head of Israel, was baffled by the fact we're sitting down with China, given the fact that they've been targeting our troops, our bases with satellites. They killed 7 of them in partnership with the IRGC because they did the satellite targeting. I've been outraged about that for a while. Now, that was just months ago. And just 2 weeks ago, we caught China trying to sneak propulsion fuel and the component parts for more ballistic missiles through our blockade. So China's literally rearming Iran in real time. Why was Trump visiting with them? After insisting the Iran war is not over, while commenting on Trump's trip to China, Netanyahu said this.
China gave a certain amount of support on particular components of missile manufacturing. But I can't say more than that.
Does that disturb you? Because it's apparently doing it right now.
Could be. Could be. I don't want to speak for China. I don't want to speak also.
But you have eyes and ears on this.
Yeah, well, you know, but I also have a closed mouth when necessary.
Is this simply insane or is it part of some bigger strategy unlike anything we've ever seen before? That leads us to insane thing number 4, Trump's China trip, where he sounded a lot like Joe Biden. In fact, worse. Babbling on about how he and she were basically great friends.
He actually just Truth Socialed while aboard Air Force One. He wrote this, I will be asking President Xi, a leader of extraordinary distinction, to open up China so that these brilliant people can work their magic and help bring the People's Republic to an even higher level. In fact, I promise that when we are together, which will be in a matter of hours, I will make that my very first request. I have never seen or heard of any idea that would be more beneficial to our incredible countries. Now, President Trump calls Xi a, quote, friend of mine and said that a lot of good things are going to happen when he lands here. It'll be.
And it went on like that all week. It was a virtual vomit parade. This guy is a mass murderer of his own people. Did Xi reciprocate Oh, hell no. In fact, the most controversial statement was one she made while he was in the room with Trump. They weren't together, but they were in the same room, where he slammed the United States, suggesting that we were a power in decline and China was an ascendant power. A total slam. Now, just using common sense here, Trump speaking positively about China doesn't seem to have anything to fear from them. And Xi, he's got sour grapes. What does that tell you about who is increasingly the power broker in this relationship? Because all of Trump's kind words, keep in mind, Trump will absolutely venerate the enemy when he's at war or in negotiation mode. And sometimes you can't tell which is which. You can't take anything he says that seriously, because here's what he wants: an oil deal with China. He's talking about Iran here.
They get a lot of their oil, 40% of their oil from that location. So what has happened, and one thing I think that we're going to make a deal on, they've agreed they want to buy oil from the United States. They're going to go to Texas. We're going to start sending Chinese ships to Texas and to Louisiana and to Alaska. And I think that was another thing that was agreed to. That's a big thing.
So if she sounds snippy, and the mainstream media interpreted this as Trump's an idiot, Trump's being magnanimous, and China's running circles around him. Look, they're stabbing him behind the back when they're in the same room. Okay, but what is Xi trying to do here? Save face. Because that oil Trump's selling to China is the oil he took from China by force. And they didn't dare fire a shot back. See, what most people don't understand is that one of the three key reasons that China was able to get a manufacturing upper hand on us is because America doesn't have a lot of the oil that's needed to make plastics, that and just about everything else. We got a ton of the other kind that you put in your, you know, in your car, but we don't have that kind. We used to get it from Venezuela, and then we sanctioned Venezuela like idiots, and we didn't enforce those sanctions. So China swept in to all of our sanctioned countries, Iran, Russia, and Venezuela, and bought that oil at pennies on the dollar, while American companies were forced to buy it on the open market, giving China a massive upper hand in manufacturing, so much so that our factories have moved there. So what Trump is saying with that 40% oil deal, he may be very polite, but I mean, he's essentially mocking China, because where else are they going to buy this oil? It used to be theirs, and they used to buy it again for pennies on the dollar out of Venezuela, but we took it. And now we're running it through Gulf refineries that were either shut down before or barely operating. And this would mean China would be forced to buy the oil in dollars. That's a humiliation for China. Now, China doesn't have to buy from us, but what they do have to do, since we control those sources, is buy somewhere on the open market for actual market price, something they haven't had to do in years. And this is where the Russian oil is so key, and why it didn't seem this week like the Trump administration was much concerned about that high inflation number, 3.8%, because they know they can bring the price of oil down anytime they want and quickly by doing Operation Freedom. But also, folks, what nobody's paying attention to is that Trump took the sanctions off Russia. They've been putting that oil back on the market. They're at almost 300,000 additional barrels a day. They're capable of 13 million more a day. That's what they did at peak. They're nowhere near that now. They're going to have to ramp up, but they will get there. They're going to get there. What does that mean? Well, Russia's not going to sell to China at a cut rate anymore when they can sell for full rate on the open market. See how Trump's strangling China? Now, do you understand why Xi is mumbling behind Trump's back that really he's ascendant? Doesn't look like he is, does it? At least not for the moment. And he made a bunch of Taiwan threats, too, thinly veiled, but threats nonetheless. But folks, I mean, how's he going to do that if we control not just the oil, but remember the routes? Because we've taken control of so many of those routes. So Trump was chipper because he can be. For the moment, he's got the upper hand. Now, what really needs to happen is he needs to fly home and resume the Iran war and end this thing. Then he needs to take permanent control of the Strait of Hormuz. And there was one more humiliation for Chiran, because keep in mind, China absolutely has iron-fisted control of Iran. They pumped $400 billion into building their nukes. They sent their own scientists, thousands of them, to do it, all in the hopes of taking the Strait of Hormuz, because nobody would be able to fire back at Iran if they were nuclear armed. And Iran is, of course, Chiran, as we know, if you listen to my previous podcast, because again, part of the deal was, okay, we're going to build the nukes, but you're going to let us come in and overlay your infrastructure, your internet, with the same companies that control China's all-encompassing camera and surveillance system. So really, again, Iran is a dictatorship inside a dictatorship. There's the dictatorship and then China over the dictatorship. So China is Chiran, right? So Trump made China this week affirm they're not going to rearm Iran, and they don't want Iran to have a nuclear weapon. Well, Trump knows that's not true. We had, again, thousands of their scientists and their help pouring out of Isfahan right before we bombed it. They built that place. And again, we've caught China recently trying to rearm Iran less than 2 weeks ago. That was a lie, too. But it was the humiliation that was the point. Here's Victoria Coates to explain.
I mean, I think this was a really bad week for the Iranian regime. They saw their prime patron, you know, which is China, roll out the red carpet for Donald Trump. I mean, China could have canceled the summit. They could have done the humiliating things they did to, remember when President Obama went to China and they kept him waiting on the tarmac for hours? You know, it was a literally ritual humiliation. Instead, you know, every bell and whistle was brought out for President Trump. He was very much, a popular visitor to Beijing. And, you know, who is outside of that? Iran. So they have to be deeply concerned. And on top of that, as you said, you know, if people want to buy energy, you want to buy from a reliable source. You don't want that cut off. And that's what Iran did to themselves when they cut off the strait originally. And now Donald Trump has turned that on them and prevented them from any exports. The United States is a much more reliable supplier.
But Coates warned, you've got to be careful when you make China one of your buyers. Here's why.
Is China really willing to become dependent on U.S. oil, especially with the specter of a conflict in Taiwan looming over all of us?
What we have to be careful about is we can't become dependent on them as a buyer. They tried to do this in Alaska 15 years ago, where they wanted to secure all of Alaska's energy exports so Alaska would become dependent on China. We need a really diverse buyer base. If one of those buyers is China, that's fine. And I also don't mind if they become a little bit dependent on us, but I'm much more concerned about us becoming dependent on them.
Insane thing number three. Now, I can damn near guarantee you, as these meetings are going on, China's rearming Iran, or Chiran, as I call it. And as I got on the air this morning, my text line was already humming with people horrified by the things that Trump said in the Sean Hannity interview. In fact, Sean Hannity looked horrified as he was conducting the interview with Trump. I'm not going to replay it here. Among the stuff, Sean Hannity asked him, hey, you know, that farmland China keeps buying up around our bases. And Trump said, nah, it's good. It's fine. Yeah, I mean, farmland would go down in value if we didn't let him do it. What? Yeah. And then he defended the idea of having 500,000 Chinese students come here on visas a year, said it would be an insult to China if we turned them away. And besides, we need their money to keep our universities afloat. People were outraged. They'd already loaded up the text line. How could Trump say these things? Okay, but what is Trump doing? Times of India reporting this week in shock and alarm that Trump has cut student visas in a single year by 20%. Wait, I thought he wanted all the Chinese students. You know, you can't listen to what he says when he's negotiating. You got to watch what he's doing. Even more alarming, India said Trump's policies are becoming more extreme and you can expect bigger cuts in the future in student visas. I'll put the link for that article in the sources. And while Trump was all roses and sunshine, and again, the audio is just too painful to listen to. I'm not going to put it here. You go find it yourself if you want it. While Trump was all sunshine and roses, saying the most ridiculous things about Chairman Xi and what a great guy he is and what a wonderful relationship that they have, what was it really like behind the scenes for the White House crew and also for the media pool? Folks, they couldn't even bring their own phones into the country. They were afraid to. Here's just a glimpse of what the sort of fear level was like behind the scenes as Trump said all kinds of flowery things. By the way, Trump himself, who's used to having his phone on him during these negotiations, didn't. This is from Fox News.
And then privately, they dealt with the brass tacks, the tough issues that they don't want the public pretty much knowing right now. I would say this. This is from the New York Post. This is one of the reporters that's in the pool. She posted this morning. She said American staff took everything the Chinese officials handed out, credentials, burner phones from the White House staff, pins for the delegation, collected them before they got on Air Force One and threw them in the trash. Nothing from China was allowed on the plane and were taken off shortly. Yep. So that's the Americans saying we understand the threat of China. We're going to try to play nice, try to get something done publicly, but privately, we're going to deal with what
that,
we know to be
that
true.
That is actually, you're right, because I have sources that are on the plane too, and they had to leave their American phones, turn them off.
That right there shows you what they really all think. They consider China to be a mortal enemy that we're at war with. Because we are. Insane thing number two. Who the heck is Anthony Fauci? Whistleblower this week from the CIA told under oath a congressional hearing that Anthony Fauci was able to sashay into the CIA and get them to lie. That early on, they knew that COVID had come out of the Wuhan lab, and all of their internal reports on it said that. That's what their analysts agreed on. And then Fauci showed up with a bunch of compromised sources, and everybody was forced to change. In other words, Fauci, who really is just a mid-level bureaucrat at the NIH, has some kind of ungodly power. I mean, who else could walk into the CIA and get them to lie and cover up for you? Which is exactly what they were doing when the CIA produced report after report saying that they really didn't know for sure what the origin was when they knew damn well. And they changed their own reports before they released them. Even worse, he said that there's thousands of pages of intel on the origins of COVID that the CIA is still hiding, even under John Ratcliffe and even under Trump. Now, I don't know that Ratcliffe and Trump could even get these pages out of the CIA if they wanted to, or maybe they can. I don't know. But they're still hiding them. That's in violation of the law because Congress has passed and Joe Biden signed. So did Trump. They did it twice. Declassification of COVID's origins. And yet the CIA hasn't turned it over. Even worse than that is the fact that Tulsi Gabbard had a team called DIG. This is what the whistleblower told us. And they were trying to get to the bottom of the origins of COVID going through intel that they had access to. And he said the whole time the CIA was spying on them, on the whistleblowers they were talking to, and everyone around them, spying illegally.
The CIA illegally monitored the computer and phone usage of DIG personnel, their investigations, and contact with whistleblowers. These were Americans being spied upon illegally, while executing duties directed by the president and under the authority of the Director of National Intelligence.
So to recap, Cus, this is insane. That means the Trump CIA is spying on the Trump Director of National Intelligence. That's Tulsi Gabbard. So anyway, John Ratcliffe, who apparently is in Cuba, reacted in outrage to this, saying this hearing wasn't fair and they shouldn't have done it. They had had the same whistleblower behind closed doors. But what the CIA didn't know was that he was going to go and do it before the American people. And so Ratcliffe got really mad. Well, Rand Paul got even madder, saying the CIA needs to stop breaking the law. And basically, there's no damn reason we can't hear from this guy. This stuff's been declassified.
The CIA says the committee acted in bad faith with this hearing. They just sent out a statement. Your response to that?
Congress passed a law to unanimously declassify all of the COVID information. We all want to know the truth. Where did it come from? Now almost every agency admits that it did come from the lab, but they still haven't been forthcoming. There's no reason to have secrets on this. We want them to obey the law. The CIA needs to obey the law, and they need to reveal the information.
Insane thing number one. In retrospect, you could see how insane it all was that this ever happened in America. that voters actually lived in congressional districts that were drawn to achieve a specific outcome, the election of a Democrat who happened to be black, that this was done, this outcome selected by a liberal judicial system before they ever went to the polls. It's the definition of tyranny, if you think about it, especially given that most of those areas, 20 of them, to be exact, would have elected Republicans if given the choice. Again, it's absolute tyranny, something you would expect from like a North Korea, a Russia, or a Cuba. It's insane that it ever happened here, that districts were not only drawn by race, but with expected electoral outcomes figured in as the goal. If these districts had produced Republican victories, this would have never happened, but a liberal Supreme Court did it back in the 1980s. And so Democrats have always had a very fake, very artificial cushion of roughly 20 seats. They just lost those. And folks, they went insane this week lying about this. And the shorthand they're telling their sheeple, who, by the way, are going to begin to kill. I mean, they really are hearing this rhetoric, and that's what scares me, that the Republicans are using the courts, and in particular the Supreme Court, to steal elections, when in fact, that's actually what the Democrats did from 1986 until last week. What became clear this week is that Democrats believe they can no longer win, or can't win most of the time, electorally. And so they're now throwing out very extreme ideas, like Kamala Harris talking about statehood for Puerto Rico, statehood for D.C., and totally packing the Supreme Court. Folks, you only do that if you can't win elections because your platform's so insane, you scare people. Here's Connecticut Senator Richard Blumenthal.
I think staggered terms, perhaps with different methods of approval, definitely ought to be adopted. They're desecrating their duty to the country by adopting politically motivated and charged decisions based on politics, not law.
Republican Speaker Mike Johnson, firing back at them, nailed it.
It shows you who they are. And for Kamala Harris to say that is very telling. They would blow the system up. These are, you know, I mean, a comment like that shows you these are institutional arsonists. It's a dangerous thing, a dangerous gambit. You don't just blow up the system when you lose.
But that's exactly what they tried to do this week, folks. In a preview of what's coming, they were enraged when their outrageous Virginia map was rejected by the Supreme Court of Virginia. So Virginia is a basically pretty close to 50-50 state. Democrats have a bit of an edge there. But they drew a map where 10 out of 11 congressional districts were Democrat. Folks, before 6 had been Democrat and 5 had been Republican. That was radical. Now, this map was approved by voters, but the problem, the Supreme Court said, wasn't even with the map. It was with all of the election laws they violated to rush it onto the ballot. The court even said they could put it back on the ballot, same exact map, and try again. Problem is, they won't have time to do that before the midterms. So listen to what the Democrats try to do, and this shows you what they're getting ready to be like if they ever get power again. They then began proposing a retroactive 55-year age limit for the state Supreme Court, making it retroactive, which would then void the judgment. But that is absolute anarchy, is what that is. And it goes to show you they're all about telling us we have to obey the law, as long as they're winning. But the second we win, or more like they lose, they're willing to completely destroy the entire system. We're already seeing that in what I call post-constitutional, post-American blue court systems. They're basically kangaroo courts. I mean, remember when they tried Trump in New York? I'll never forget this. The state legislature, they couldn't even find a law that he'd broken, so they passed one just for him and made it retroactive. That's kangaroo court stuff. And folks, that's what we're seeing from the Democrats. Well, the Democrats blow up these courts. What they're counting on is that we love this country and, you know, we tend to be law abiding and we tend to follow court orders as we gently appeal them over time. Folks, what you're going to end up having is Republican states just gaff off court rulings that are absurd if they pack that court. They think we won't do that, but I'm telling you, states will. And then the whole system will collapse. Maybe that's what they want. Because what they're talking about turning these courts into is essentially legislatures. But folks, I want to end on a note of hope here. Because what you're hearing with all this from them, I mean, come on, what does it sound like to you? It's desperation. Why? Two things. CNN pollster Harry Enten admitted this week, yeah, that back in March, Democrats had a 6-point edge in the midterms. After everything that's happened, they're down to a 3-point edge in the midterms, which puts them in the margin of error. And daily, they're losing more seats that were stolen from us by a liberal court that drew those seats that otherwise would have elected Republicans to elect Democrats instead. Without that kind of actual court cheating, they can't win, especially with the radical agenda that they have. And so, folks, I got to warn you, from here on out, they're going to get crazier. They're going to get more violent because against all odds, Trump is winning. And nobody captured that better this week than Newt Gingrich, because this is the quote of the week. Newt Gingrich was the Republican Speaker of the House, but Newt Gingrich is also a historian. And what's going on right now with Trump stepping up and fighting back and taking these districts back? Because, folks, the reason we never did, the reason we never sued, the reason we never fought is because the Bush people were either in the White House or they controlled the party. This is why there were never any suits on this. But that has changed. And the Democrats don't know how to live in a world where the Bush Karl Rove cabal does not control the Republican Party and we don't capitulate. Now, watch all of Newt Gingrich's interviews, and I'm here to tell you, he was pretty pessimistic about the direction the midterms were going in up until just a few weeks ago. That's what made this interview stand out so much to me. And what changed? Supreme Court ruling. We got our power back. Why? Because Trump fought and is committed to defeating these people, something we haven't had on our side, well, in a long time.
Mr. Speaker, they overplayed their hands, and now you're seeing it play out right now. They're losing right now. Republicans may gain 10 plus states, seats, I'm sorry.
Well, look, we haven't seen this kind of nationwide power struggle since Thomas Jefferson destroyed the Federalist Party. Between 1796 and 1812, Jefferson went after literally destroying the Federalist. The word gerrymander comes from the last stage of that fight. So that's the only other time in American history that we've seen the mobilization of everything. I mean, California's involved. Democrats didn't mind when California wiped out Republican seats. They loved Virginia wiping out Republican seats. All of a sudden, the institutional tide has turned. And this is why Trump is such a historic figure. He is the first person to really take the establishment head on and to grind at them and grind at them and grind at them. And the result is they're breaking apart. They're breaking apart in the universities. They're breaking apart in terms of the maps.
Battleground America with Tara Servatius. Please subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Share with friends, family, and other free thinkers. Thanks for listening.